circumstance says it's already getting better.
Down the railroad track, it makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pound to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
This is Dave Monk, the Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 in your FM dial.
And Dave on the board.
And we have a busy schedule today. Don't know whether I'll get through all of it, but here we go. A little summary of some of the things that happened, and a few notifications. There's a solo walk in the background. It's on October the 3rd. And, I didn't put the detail here for the... So there's a link. Stuart Levy has the link also. He's Sierra Club. But the idea is to allow people to see that it's getting more possible to have solar experiences. The solar panels are getting to be somewhat cheaper, and the engineering is less. The university is just putting in something like 20 acres of solar panels on South Farms, just south of Windsor Road. If you're driving that road, it's just east of the Canadian National Railroad line, very visible. So if the clouds cooperate, the moon erupts tonight. It's about 9 o'clock, you'll see it, the total, but it's probably doubtful you will see it because of the clouds. It's quite an experience.
If you go to the NASA website, they expect that people may be clouded out, and so that they're going to have cameras set up in various places around the country so that you'll, if you're willing to settle for just looking at it on your computer, you can go there. They say that this is the last of a 4-cycle, something like that. They run in cycles of 4, and we're finishing this. It'll be till 2018, I think, before we have our next total eclipse that we'll get to see. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that tonight. And they say it's going to be a tiny, tiny little bit bigger because the moon is actually 30,000 miles closer today than it can be at its, you know, when it's the furthest away. So if you want to see a slightly, incrementally 1 degree larger or something moon tonight, you'll see it.
Good information. I want to remind you that on Sunday mornings, start at 7:30 in that area, there's a bird watch, and it's very interesting to go. Often Beth Jado and Helen Parker get there, and they know their birds. And it's in Busey Woods, and I think you would enjoy that. I have it here as October 4th, so it's... 7:30 to 9, and learn the basic bird watching and identification techniques with Champaign County Audubon leaders. There's a few other things we encountered during the week. Perhaps we should say that the mission of this radio program is to give you an access to some of the environmental things that are happening in and around WEFT and their 50-mile radius. We don't always get all the details, but sometimes we have write-ins and letters and complaints and interesting and exciting things. So one of the things we... I encountered this week was microbeads. A lot of the cosmetics and toothpaste and things like that have very, very tiny pieces of plastic in them. And it's so tiny that you can't filter it out with any normal sanitary treatment situation. So it goes into the streams, and then it's eaten by the fish, and then you eat the fish, and then you have these little pieces of plastic in you. So I thought that was one that was worth reporting on, because there used to be natural things that you put in toothpaste to be a sort of an abrasive. But this has replaced it, but it's not a very good replacement. So often, it's amazing, a few letters, people who are thinking, that's enough to change the system. It's amazing. I was talking about the Audubon Society in Busey Woods, but the Audubon Society had, as independent people, provided a wealth of information about birds and the environmental in general. And so so too can you change things a little bit. I was watching the gay parade, and somebody gave me a handout for Bernie Sanders, and sitting right on it is a sweet with sugar in it. So I wrote off to Bernie Sanders' organization and said, you know, the research is beginning to show that sugar has its dangers, so you need to be wary, but to use it as a promotional does not seem to say that Bernie Sanders knows what this latest scientific information is. And so why don't you quit doing that? So just a little piece of information. Chris Campbell took me to the Black Dog Saloon, which is rather wonderful. It's the old railroad station. It's north of the 1920s railroad station and north of the MTD, which is the present railroad station. Three buildings in a row, and the old railroad station has been modified as a restaurant, and it's very popular. The counterpart in Urbana has always been very popular. If you drive past, you always see people standing outside. So this is a new one. It's a little bit more modern than I thought. I thought it would be more rustic, but it's very modern and very friendly. And I was there last night, took a few photographs. There were people everywhere. And there was a Pygmalion festival on at the same time. And you could alternatively have your stomach sort of vibrating a little bit, but otherwise you could do it. Did you go to Pygmalion?
I sure didn't. I actually got together with some friends and did some other things instead. I was going to mention about the new Black Dog here in downtown. First of all, we should mention, of course, we're going to mention at the end, as always, but the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers. There are a couple of throwback things over at the new Black Dog. If you look up at the fans that spin, there's only one motor that powers all of the fans that you see in a row because they're all run. There's a pulley that goes from the motor to the first fan, and then another pulley goes from that fan to the next one, and then just goes right down in a row, so that you only need one motor to power all of the fans. If you look up at the ceiling, they also have an old Wurlitzer 45 playing jukebox. And when I was there, they hadn't even opened yet. You could get stuff to go, and I asked them, "We'll be able to use it, right?" And yes, it turns out for 50 cents or whatever, there were only two records in it. But apparently, when they moved into the Black Dog in downtown Urbana, when they went up to see what they had upstairs, they found piles and piles of 45s. So they may populate this old Wurlitzer with 45s from, Lord knows, from the 1960s or something like that. So that'll be I haven't been there since they've been officially opened yet, but I'm looking forward to getting there and listening to some vintage old music from maybe even before I was around.
Yes. So we're interested in that area generally because we think some of the warehouses that are not being used could be used in a sort of cooperative development. We're even thinking evenly of perhaps sometime having a steam train come into the railroad that is on the other side of the warehouse. And this water tower there has been the top's been removed, but the pedestal is there. We'd like to put the water tower back, not as a carrier of water, but as a symbol for this particular area, and to keep it sort of like it was is very interesting. This is what people saw or left when they went to World War I, World War II. This is part of your downtown history, and we want to remind people that there is a history, and you should know about it. Okay, we had an IHOP group, and David was part of that. We had 18 people. This was post us having 50 IHOP students on Saturday last week. This was on Friday, just a day or so ago, and I was remiss. It's fairly easy to get to our Camp Creek, Seymour Prairie site, but when the students turned into the site, they missed that we were right there, not way to the west. And my crime was that I have a phone that doesn't have a mute button, so I turned it on to quiet or don't disturb, and they couldn't call me by a cell phone. So I have solved that problem now, but I really need a phone that has a mute button because it's so much easier to do when you're in a meeting or some other place. And it's very easy to forget if you don't know the technology of getting to the other ways of doing it, to close it off. So I have some debate with Verizon about that. So they helped pick seed. Not everyone was used to walking through the prairie. I had one group, and David had another group. You might want to say something about your group.
I had my own view of how we were going to do this. About a week ago, Dave and I were out there with a friend of ours, and we picked up to a certain point, so I knew exactly where the bush was, where we were going to start with these young folks on Friday. And in my mind, I would set them up sort of like they were sprinters in a race. They would be one here and then a row over and a row over, and they would each Well, see, and I missed the fact that they were all business majors. They knew each other. And so instead of being spread out, they wanted to be near each other so they could continue conversations of how is this class going this semester and should I take that class or that class and things like that. So I got to see what I think it must look like when bison go through an area, because they slowly en masse move forward through this one section of prairie, you know, again, like 10 young people. And when they were done, it was completely flattened. Fortunately, of course, everything they were picking was ahead of them, and I showed them how to go looking down underneath all of the brush to see these tiny little plants under there. So they found lots of seed, but there was nothing left standing. It'll take a while, I think, before all those things finally unbreak their backs, and hopefully by the end of the season they're back standing again. But there's a huge swath of just flattened prairie out there. Very funny.
I tell them that it's not unlike having buffalo move into a prairie. It will remain. This is a ceanothus or a New Jersey tea, and it has a root that is really serious. It's red, so it's often called bloodroot, and it's a shrub. It doesn't look like a shrub. It's only about 2 feet tall, but its stump, it broke plows. So the plow people had to invent a stump jump plow, which would lift up over these plants. And it's got a name of New Jersey tea, so it's not exactly that rare. But prairie preservation people have a problem growing rows of prairie plants, because there is an association, and often we don't know what the association is. Who's the pollinator? What? How does one microorganism sort out with biochemistry that they supply, and they're all eating on each other's backs, and they're finding their niches, and it's not easy to grow prairie plants in a row and harvest them efficiently with a combined harvester. So that's why we have to pick them. And it's a little sad this year, because the yield is not nearly as great as it was last year. You could pick a handful of this seed last year and get a real bagful of seeds very quickly. So I think most of our paper sacks had just a few seeds.
Could there be correlation there? If you do an especially good job one year, is there less seed there? How long does it take for it to germinate? If you missed it and it just poofed and it left its seeds on the ground, how long before that would actually show up?
Oh, that's interesting. If you want this plant to grow, you put it in a refrigerator for a while, and then you put it, well, you put it in boiling water or hot water, and then you stratify it and refrigerate it so it thinks could go on through a season, and it will grow really quickly. So it's a very friendly plant in that sense. When you miss it, if its seeds drop, they're very dehiscent and they will pop 15 feet. But in the case where we're there, there are so many plants there already that it probably won't grow at all. It doesn't hurt that we're harvesting them. It goes to southern Minnesota, to Prairie Moon, and they refrigerate it at a very low, slight refrigeration. And then it gets distributed back to people who want to preserve prairies within 100 mile where it was picked, so that you sort of keep the gene pool as it was in early times when settlers came. I tend to want to tell a little story about that. This is a fairly original prairie. David's a little bit more on the let's get him to work. So there's a difference there. But you can't rail people with too much information. We have two railroad beds. One is the main line, which we own as Heartland Pathways, and the other one is an old urban, and both of them have very good prairie on them. And our bed especially has a terrain which has not been disturbed, not been plowed. You can see the terrain over the associated house across the way that has the same sort of territorial landscape. We want to remind people that you were going up a hill, so there's a Cerro Gordo moraine, and you have a moisture gradient there. So it doesn't hurt for them to know a little bit about this. These are the business people who have to consider. If we ask them to put in a prairie, they have to know that they're not going to earn money from that prairie. It reads sense, but not finance. So we're talking to, we're glad to have business people who can think about how we do business in a sustainable manner. So we're very pleased that they then helped me. We've had a problem in that site where volunteer Department of Transportation mowing has been really quite excessive. So the Department of Transportation and the landscape people have put up signs, and we had put cut off power poles about 3 feet long and about 10 inches in diameter. They actually had been supporting the floor of the old Black Dog Saloon. And so we put them there, and the students helped to roll them into place so that the mowing people would actually know not to go behind that Department of Transportation sign, which says more or less wildflowers, which is so, but it's also prairie. So we took some photographs, and I think they left pleased with their efforts, even though we got them there just a little bit late for the technology. But we've learned a thing or two. Just a little bit more information about how to use that cell phone. Okay. We had that same night a seminar on grasshoppers, which I thought was rather wonderful, and grasshoppers and katydids. And I forget that gentleman's name now, but it's Natural History Survey. So I scooted out of that quickly because I wanted to go to the Calix celebration, and did so. That's basically Bill Taylor. And it's a house and a barn that have been moved in from a nearby farm. And Bill's been doing that for a long time. And he lives nearby, and it's on his land. And a lot of people who have alternate interests and sustainable interests enjoy contra dancing in that barn. And it's a community place. After I'd been there, I took a wander along the railroad bed that we own between Cisco and Monticello. I had reports that the prairie had been scalped, and it's true. We thought we had a no-mow policy on that corridor, and it has really healthy prairie down to the ditch. Now, this is old Route 47 that has been replaced by Federal Highway 72. So most of the traffic from Monticello to Decatur is on 72, not on 47. So it's a modestly driven highway. That doesn't mean to say that people don't speed along it. It actually is a speedway because there's not a lot of traffic on it. But the road is parallel to the railroad line that came first. And the prairie we're talking about is on the upside of a drainage ditch. If you look at a cross-section of your road, it has a camber in the middle so the water can run off to the sides. And then there's a ditch. And that's probably about 4 or 5 feet wide and about 2 or 3 feet deep. But there's a tendency to mow the downside, then mow the upside, and the upside is loaded with prairie. At this time of the year, much of it is not even flowered yet. Some of it is seed that we need to harvest. It does belong to the Department of Transportation, but the Department of Transportation landscape people have adjudicated to say, please don't mow the upside of the ditch. But there is 4 miles of mown on both sides. I was with my headlights, and I could see it, and no-frill well, and I probably will go out with a video camera and travel the side, because this is a very, very costly procedure, and it's so mean to take out all those pollinators and that seed, and there needs to be some way of using a small mower to mow down to the ditch. Part of the problem is that the mowers are 15 feet bush hogs that are huge. But the cost in labor and equipment and the loss of ambiance is serious. So we're working at that. So, farmer's market, then talk to people at the farmer's market and enjoy myself there. I tend to gather up products that are a little bit damaged. There might be a cricket that got into them, or it's and I grew up with parents that were not very financial. They'd come into my father had come into being a school teacher later in life, and we didn't have a lot of money. So my mother was also from England, and she came to Australia, and they didn't have much money either. So my mother used to go to the markets, and they would buy seconds. The material in this, not quite graded at the same type. You go into a store these days, you find all the apples, all the same size, all covered with a slight wax. They look nice and shiny, and there's not one pockmark in them. That happens, it's sorted out. We used to, when we had volunteers coming from Europe, we used to buy the seconds by the box. If we could see mangoes were getting overripe, we would contract to buy a box of mangoes for $5 or something like that. But there's so much of that stuff. It's hard for the stores to handle. They don't know whether you're going to have a razor blade or a knife in there. It's very hard to work into their back store to gather stuff. So it's sort of come that most of the stores do not allow you to pick up seconds. But they're there. And they can't go to the food distributing people, because the requirement is you have to have refrigeration, especially if they're not totally whole. But sometimes that's where they can go. But do we have a compost where they can go? That doesn't happen either. So I tend to go to the farmer's market and carry, especially, has boxes that where people know that they can buy pears that are slightly off, but if you get home and do it fast, you have a valuable, nutritious product, and it's very, very tasty. So I enjoy that. I find people with flowers and other things that are also quite respectable, but perhaps a little bit different from the regular. So I went around the corner, and Independent Media is putting up a mural. There's a wall on the south side of what used to be the old post office in a banner, and Maya Bauer and Adrian Bauer were there painting a mural. Maya is an artist, and Adrian is a painter, and I like this richness of the colors they had, the design. I took a photograph. It's not always fair to take a photograph of a mural before it's finished, or any artwork before it's finished, because it's not finished yet. But that was allowed. And I'm backing that. There's a huge wall to the south, which could be a mural wall, but that hasn't happened yet. Yes, at the co-op, after lots of discussion and the like, people who were prairie people decided to put in a prairie outside of the co-op food market where the tables are for people to sit, and they put in a perennial prairie. And the perennial prairie had to have deep roots. The prairie has deep roots and lots of roots. So with a lot of suggestion and permission from the co-op board, these planters were planted 4 feet high and insulated so that the roots wouldn't freeze in wintertime. And then the plants were there, and they've been doing very well. Very well, it has to have some reservation about it. Prairie plants look like weeds. If you don't know your onions about your local ecosystem, it has small flowers. They flower for a small time, then they die and they look weedy, and it's very easy to not have a prairie, especially if you're out in the railroad beds, because there's a tendency to think that, the highest and best use for that is not for the weeds, and the weeds might get into the crop of corn and soybean anyway. But bless me, I looked, and there were a bunch of mums installed in the perennial prairie planters. And wow. So I took some photographs, and I think I know what happened. What often happens is that the people who initiate the move to have a school prairie or a park prairie or what have you leave town, and there's no one to pick up. And so in this case, somebody just looked at that and said, it looks ugly. Let's put mums in. And it looks wonderful if you're a mum person. But the prairie plants, which were deep-rooted, got pulled out. And so Karen Levy grabbed those up, and she's put them in her backyard in Champaign. But unfortunately, her backyard is got trees in it. And if you put perennial plants in under trees, they sort of become annuals, so they don't act the same way. Prairie needs really open light. That was a little bit of the problem with the prairie at the co-op, was that the plants would bend out to the light, and that made them look a little bit leggy. But wow, so some of the plants are still growing, but to have a perennial plant that is like 2 feet tall or is a costly plant, and that was a costly mistake. So I spent some time there yesterday trying to figure out what we can do. The prairie can probably go back in as long as there's someone around to care for it. There might also be a need for a little plaque that says this is a prairie, and then it's here for an educational purpose. It's not here for ambiance. As it's ambiance, if you care for a prairie, you'll be very excited by the flowers that are there when they come, how they come. But so it's either a little brass or copper indication, or if we don't have that sort of money, a little plastic sign to say, excuse us, but this is a planter system that's designed to give you access to a prairie that most of you never see. And the person put in the mums, who's a genuine person, probably doesn't realize what a prairie is, may not have ever encountered the local ecosystem prairie. So we need to keep doing that, but it's sometimes a little shocking when you have your prairie mown out or dug out or taken over corn and soybeans. What happened next to me? We have a rail trail photographer coming. We've had rail trail people here. They've written an article. It will probably be in the fall edition of the Rail Trail magazine. But they've decided they want to come and take a special photograph or two. So we're working with the guy's name is Chris Butcher, and he's a well-known photographer out of Indianapolis, and he will come across. And so after this program, I'm going to just scoot around and see whether we can find some photogenic prairie, because they're writing about Heartland Pathways in the context of how does Heartland Pathways use rail trails to preserve habitat. And so often when we're working with trails and habitat and sustainability of the vegetation on either side of the railroad ballast, we're working in cooperative things. I'm thinking it wouldn't hurt at all to have some of the images of the Kickapoo Trail, especially a bridge which has its merits of being preserved with the Rail Banking Act. And then also there's a trail that the City of Monticello has put in it over the Sangamon River at Monticello. So these are cooperative ventures that we might also think about putting some of the challenges we have at Weldon, some of our rail trail property dug up. And the fear there is that there will be a trail, and that's a challenge. So those of you who want to have trails through farmland, you have to think about knowing something about what you're moving through. It's one of the problems with rail trail facilities is that most people who are on bicycles want to go from A to B, whether it's from little town to little town, or from Urbana to Danville, or from Champaign to Monticello to Allerton Park. But do the people on the bicycles want to know the prairie that's going through? And once you open up those corridors, you're also opening it up for motorcycles. They might not be allowed, but they might be there anyway. And so they do wheelies on the prairie. So do we dare to operate, open up the corridor? But from Urbana to Danville, there's $12 million budget to develop the line as a trail, and part of the cost of that will be to go over the Union Pacific Railroad with a bridge and to put a side fence on a bridge at Danville that goes over the Vermilion River. We probably will also introduce the photographer to the possibility of a bicycle trail between Rantoul and Paxton. It's about 10 miles, and it's an old, old concrete road, but in its day it was, first of all, a corduroy road where you put down trees at an angle crossways on the muddy road so the carts didn't fall into it and bog. Then it was a gravel road. We have a little prairie on a gravel pit. So part of the gravel pit has gone onto a road. So gravel, and then eventually concrete road when in the WPA era of the Depression, when public works did things like put in concrete slab roads. So that's where we had volunteers Saturday last week, and it's possible that we'll introduce the photographer to that corridor, and we're especially looking for interesting pieces of prairie, but prairie is past its peak at the moment, so now we're into the era of or the season of grasses. And the grasses are interesting. They wave their wooden leg in the wind, and you can imagine a prairie, and it's much more possible for people to understand a grass prairie. But the grasses weren't universal. There's about 100 prairie plants that are broadleaves, and then about six grasses, and some of those are rather short. Bootaloo or side oats is short. Little blue stem is short. So that corridor goes up over the Bloomington Moraine, and you have a moisture gradient from very wet and damp and malaria-filled area like Flatville before it was drained. And then you go up gradually to mesic prairie to dry prairie, and then you go down the backside of the moraine, which is gentle slope to Ludlow, and up to Paxton, where there's very good prairie just about a mile south of Paxton. There's a Prospect Cemetery there that's really unique. So, and a little further up, there's Loda Prairie, where yesterday my Grand Prairie friends were picking seeds to augment prairies, and especially the prairie that's a 9-acre buffer zone around that original prairie cemetery plot that wasn't used. It was in reserve for future times, which is often the case with many local cemeteries. So somewhere in there we'll find some interesting prairie and hope that it finds its way into the Rail Trail Journal. I got on Skype. I've not been a big Skype person, but I have a nephew in Australia who does well, and so we've been talking to my brother, who unfortunately had a bout of Parkinson's disease for about 15 years. It's a very slow and pernicious thing, and he was in intensive care just last week, but he was out and he was at home for the weekend, and very vocal, where you can't exactly talk to people who have Parkinson's disease because it gets your muscles. So your eyes don't function quite so well, your vocal cords don't operate so well, you fall over backwards. It's a kind of a pernicious disease. But we had Skype, and we started to talk about cricket and the things we used to do, play marbles on and around the buttress roots of coral trees, and that reminded me of a book I've mentioned before, but it's about northern Queensland, and it's written very well by a woman, and she grew up with five sisters and one brother in northern Queensland, which is the Cape of York, very nearly up there towards New Guinea, very hot, north of the Tropic of Capricorn, very tropical. And I sort of have been realizing that as we grew up as children, we grew up in an area that was where the several generations had come forth before we came, but there were the elements of the older generations there. So I started to list some of these, and I put them down. And I was still doing that when I looked up, and it was very nearly time for the program. So it's probably more than I can squeeze into 15 minutes. But first of all, you have to know that plate tectonics allows there to be a mountain ridge all along the east coast of Australia. Australia has about the same surface area as continental U.S., but it has a big desert. Any clouds that move east from the Indian Ocean across the country don't strike a mountain. In the U.S., you have the same sort of Kringle Mountains, and you have the Rocky Mountain ranges. So the sun, clouds laden with moisture rise up and dump on places like Colorado. And then you have a rain shadow, and the prairie is very short and gradually gets taller as you get to the east. Well, Australia's only mountain is that Blue Mountain Range, which goes right on the east coast. There's a coastal plain, and you have to know when you buckle the earth enough, you get volcanoes, you get volcanism, and so on the top of that mountain are some very rich areas that are on rather a total landscape which is very washed and was under a sea at one time. So on very poor soil you have very rich spots, and on those spots there are rainforest. And you also have, with tectonics, you have a movement of the geology so that you also have minerals. And so one of the first things that happens is you go looking for minerals, for gold and for tin and for silver and things like that. So this is not so long ago. Australia only got found in 1776. The convicts that went there that couldn't come to the U.S. came there fairly shortly after that. Then there was the exploration for mining. You had to get up over that hill with zigzag railroads or with a horse. This was mostly a very male institution until women came into the act, often begged to come in because the population was so dominantly male. But for a woman to get up that mountain, it was a matter of side saddles because you had so many skirts and that you couldn't ride in a more traditional manner. You had to have horses. You had to have water because you're on a dry landscape. And the first people were miners. Sometimes there were entrepreneurs came in. There was a little bit of nobility there in amongst the convict population. There was this coastal plain, which was also very dry and very sedimentary and washed and worn, so they were very dependent on the Aboriginals for survival techniques. And unfortunately, the very generous Aboriginals eventually realized that they were being screwed, and that changed things. So there was a sort of battle royal between the two, but you would have, in the Cape York situation, you still had Aboriginals around well into the 19th century. You had a rainforest, but you also had Aboriginals with little gunyahs that are made out of bark and such as roofs and in amongst the forests. And gradually the miners came. They would use the Aboriginals almost as slaves. They would open up and put in some farm. They went to the South Sea Islands and got Kanakas to bring in. These were the Fuzzy Wuzzies, not an Aboriginal in the Australian sense, but Aboriginal in the Oceania sense. And they were more Fuzzy Wuzzies. They were used almost in a slave situation, but eventually the Australians decided to repatriate those people to their islands. And if you wanted to stay, you could stay. So there were still some people who looked very different and were part of the early settlement. They would cut the cane if you had cane to cut. And still there was the problem of an advancing generation, and this generation had was often very British. It was the era of colonialism, and it was colonial for all manner of countries: Germany, Belgium, Holland, Italy, Spain. All had their intent to be out there as colonials. The book sort of is written as from a mature point of view, and the question is, what were we doing? Why were we there cutting down the huge trees for survival? What did we think about what we were doing? And the answer is often no. And there was for Australia, there was a British, part British, part, Irish was there too. So there was a slight element of nobility. I grew up with a Frewen family that was related to the Churchills, and so the names of the children were Saxon and Viking and those sorts of names. So here we have people who have 2 feet. They're one in one country or one society and one in the other. They not only have 2 feet geologically, but they have 2 feet from a religious point of view. So there are the Anglicans, and the national religion is Anglican. And then there are the Catholics, which sort of somewhat like oil and water. They don't always mix. So you still have today, I have relatives that were not anxious to attend their daughter's marriage because she was marrying a Catholic and rudely called a Mick. And so there's a slight difference there, and it goes back to your roots. There's also a role of women. What do women do? All of a sudden, they are the ones that have to keep the show on the road, because the men are either mining, or they're running timber mills, or they're running railroad lines that eventually get into the hinterlands, or they're running bullock teams. And so back in my generation, we still had bullock teams, and they were very adept at taking out trees with the aid of pulleys and the like, so that they could take out the tree they wanted to take out, but not destroy. They didn't have to clear cut, which is a very common way of working with the forest these days. It'll always grow back, but these are trees that don't grow back quickly. They may be 200, 300, 400 years old and irreplaceable. So you have women who are at home, perhaps, but they also have to ride horses. They have to deal with snakes. They have to deal with mosquitoes. Everyone has to have a mosquito net, because you can't go to sleep with a huge population of mosquitoes. You have malaria. You have axes that are used to remove trees, but they also have to be very sharp, and they can cut into a leg. And so you have to have be an amateur doctor. And so there are these rainforests being lost to cattle and crops. And so I still grew up with these huge logs being brought down the mountain pass, 7 miles of sharp curves, bends, and they would not only have a break, but they would have they had used their engine as a break, so it would backfire. So you could hear timber jingers coming down the mountain, boom, 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 boom. You could hear them 7 miles away, and those trees would go into coach making for railroads or coastal shipping, and that was still there in our generation. And it may be still there in another generation, the leftovers of the bullocky with an 18-foot whip that you could control animals with, or the more loving bullocky who would lean up against his bullocks and stroke their head, and behind their horns they loved it. And so to understand this sort of forward movement requires an understanding of, by both males and females. Do the females still defer to the males? Yes. Do the females still have to dress up? Yes. But mostly they ran around with bare feet. Because if you're in a rainy area where we were, there was 80 inches of rainfall a year. But you could have much more than that if you had tropical rainfall. You had to deal with cyclones coming in, which are like tornadoes. And you'd have for some months tsunamis with water running over those coastal plains. So then your women become much more practical and pragmatic and doing a lot of the work, growing vegetables, growing, educating. So there's an education there. So where do you get your education? Are you educated people who know a lot about nature, and you don't have formal background? If you're on the noble side, you may have a knowledge of Shakespeare or other authors. How can you educate your students? Do you have boarding schools? Yes. Do you have schools that are church schools? Yes. Do you have young women who come to such schools and then leave because they have a different life? They're not there with, and they're especially not happy with a papal type of regular religion with a lot of symbology. They know a man's world and they know how to work, but they not necessarily do they have access to a library or things like that. But it's getting very at the end, and I've enjoyed talking to you. We'll get back to some of that sometime. It has its counterparts in other countries where the same sort of thing was going on, same sort of repatriation of Kanakas and the like. So this has been Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champagne, 90.1 on your FM dial, and
Dave on the board.
And thanks for listening.
And as always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and nobody else. It is coming up hard on noon, and that means it is time for Shruti, Music of India, here on WEFT Champagne. We are community radio for East Central Illinois. Thank you.